From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. President Bush is taking more than the Texas heat when it comes to Iraq. August is proving to be a bloody month for American troops there, with more than 40 already dead. New polls show the public's approval of Bush's handling of the war hitting new lows. And on the road to the Western White House stands the accusing figure of Cindy Sheehan, mother of a dead soldier, saying she wants U.S. troops brought home. Yesterday, a visibly uncomfortable president said no.
Pulling troops out prematurely will betray the Iraqis. Our mission in Iraq, as I said earlier, is to fight the terrorists, is to train the Iraqis. And we're making progress training the Iraqis. Oh, I know it's hard for some Americans to see that progress, but we are making progress.
We expect to hear from Cindy Sheehan later this hour from the roadside in Crawford, and we'll take the shifting temperature of a nation looking hard at the war that is no cakewalk. This hour on Point, George Bush in the hot seat on Iraq. We begin with a closer look at what's confronting President Bush in Texas. Bennett Roth is national correspondent for the Houston Chronicle. He joins us from Waco, just up the road from Crawford. Bennett Roth, thanks for being with us.
Thanks. Hi, Tom.
So talk to us about the forces converging, the dynamics converging around the president there on the ranch. This is not a comfortable retreat.
Right. If he thought he was going to have a relaxing vacation, he's been a little disappointed this week. And especially right down the road from him are camped out Cindy Sheehan and an increasing number of families of people who have been either killed in Iraq or serving in the military, sort of driving home some of the dissatisfaction around the nation.
Bennett, can you give us a little logistical geographic description of how the setup is there? How far from, I don't know, the front gate of Bush's ranch is Cindy Sheehan? Who's with her? What's the setting exactly?
She is about 2 miles from the ranch. It's a two-lane country, winding country road with ranches on both sides, and she and her followers are basically confined to the side of a road, a little bit of right-of-way. It's almost kind of a ditch there where they've set up little lean-tos, and there's a bunch of vans and signs.
Is there a media circus around them now, a kind
there
of Michael Jackson-style camp?
I think maybe there are more media vans than there were vehicles from the protesters.
And meanwhile, back on the ranch, President Bush huddling yesterday almost seemed hunkered down with Vice President Cheney, with Condoleezza Rice, with Donald Rumsfeld. How do you understand their agenda before he walked out for his press conference?
Well, you know, it just appeared to many of us that he sort of wanted to address Mrs. Sheehan. I mean, the press didn't initially ask about her, and yet in one of his responses to troop withdrawal, he suddenly launched into a bit of an explanation about how he understands, you know, these people who have made losses, but, you know, he's not changing his mind. But he sort of felt that he needed to address this. It's become such a public relations problem for them.
And what do you make of the mixed signals that appear to be coming out of the Bush administration? Just last week we had General, was it Casey? Yes, George Casey saying, you know, maybe next spring, next summer, we could start a substantial pullout of U.S. troops. Yesterday, the president taking quite a different line on that. What did he say, and what do you make of the difference?
Well, he did seem to be dialing back a little bit, saying, well, this is just speculation, and we've got to make sure, you know, the situation on the ground is such that the training of the Iraqis is up to par so we can withdraw. But it is interesting that he seemed to be trying to dampen some of the speculation, and maybe some of the latest information he's receiving has caused him to be more cautious.
A reporter yesterday asked him about pullout. And, of course, this is where he turned to later. I'm sorry, the reporters asked after he talked about a pullout and saying that he had heard the cry of American voices there. A reporter asked if he was talking about Cindy Sheehan in particular. Let's listen to what the president had to say.
You know, listen, I sympathize with Mrs. Sheehan. She feels strongly about her position. She has every right in the world to say what she believes. This is America. She has a right to her position. And I've thought long and hard about her position. I've heard her position from others, which is get out of Iraq now. And it would be a mistake for the security of this country and the ability to lay the foundations for peace in the long run if we were to do so.
Bennett Roth, when this press conference was over, I've never seen President Bush move away from the microphone quite so quickly in that hot sun with Dick Cheney and the others trailing along behind.
The administration has been quite successful in framing the American conversation about the war in Iraq. Do they feel that that framing is slipping away from them?
Well, I think they are anxious. I mean, they're reading the same polls that we all are about the public support dropping, at least the last one, dropping below 40%, which means even some of his own Republican base seems to be having qualms about it. But on the other hand, there isn't a consensus in the country about what to do next. I mean, pulling out troops is not necessarily right away the most popular means in the country.
So what do you see coming up in the remainder of this month? Is it just steady as she goes? Can the White House deal with these sliding poll numbers because the president's not up for re-election? Is he just going to stick with his strategy, never mind Cindy Sheehan, never mind the polls?
Well, I mean, this president, one thing you can say from him is he's generally consistent on these things and rarely makes big concessions to his critics. So, I mean, most of us are not expecting a major turnaround. I mean, I think they're hoping maybe for a change in topic.
But he looked pretty darned uncomfortable in that hot sun yesterday. Bennett Roth, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Bennett Roth, national correspondent for the Houston Chronicle. He spoke with me from Waco, Texas. We are talking this hour about Cindy Sheehan's vigil and President Bush in the hot seat on Iraq. You can join the conversation. Did you see the president in that hot sun yesterday? Are you with him on Iraq? Or are you with the mother by the road in Crawford? Is the Bush framing of the war in Iraq slipping? And should it be? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining me now from San Francisco is Norman Solomon, executive director of the Institute for Public Accuracy. He writes the syndicated column Media Beat and is author of the new book War Made Easy, How Presidents and Pundits Keep Spinning Us to Death. Norman Solomon, welcome.
Good to be with you.
So here's a moment. Something is going on here. Something is shifting. How would you describe it?
Well, it's a reframing of the Iraq war issue coming from the grassroots. And I think what's been percolating up for many months, more than a year really, is now intruding on the way that the president is able to present the issue. He's been really able to rely since the invasion on two dynamics that every president has enjoyed after going to war. One is that there's a support our troops kind of a reflex after the first missiles are fired and the invasion begins. And then the refrain that Lyndon Johnson used, that President George W. Bush has used as well, we can't cut and run. What Cindy Sheehan and I think the constituencies that she represents have been able to do in the last week quite noticeably is bring into public view in a way that can't be ignored another position, which is not only from the Democratic Party we will quibble about tactical choices being made in this war, but a fundamental rejection of not only the origin of the war, but the continuation of it.
You know, I think back to how individuals, ordinary Americans really, have had such an impact on the way this war has seen. When the Army's Thomas Wilson in the Tennessee Army National Guard confronted Donald Rumsfeld in Kuwait on the lack of armor for troops going into Iraq. When Joseph Darby, a private in the Army, exposed Abu Ghraib, not the media, but individuals. Now Cindy Sheehan standing by the road, initially all alone, but somehow from that position, shifting the national view maybe as much as anything in this war.
Well, I think the discussion for so long, and you gave examples of it in the news media, taken up by the pundits of the country for the most part, has been a tactical dispute. What is the best way to pursue this war? The president has been able to keep some of the critics within the media establishment and elsewhere at bay with the notion that, you know, maybe you didn't agree with going into the war, but now that we're there, we can't leave. This is the classical argument that was used year after year during the Vietnam War by Presidents Johnson and then Nixon. And so much of what is shared between that war and this is that two elements have converged. One is that the war drags on without any apparent sign of victory. The other is that as time goes on, the deception that was the basis for the war becomes more clear to the public. And as the convergence of those two elements persists, the poll numbers for the president's policy continue to drop. And now I think we're moving into a phase where it's not simply a dispute over how to manage the problem of the war or what to do with the evidence that is emerging that this is indeed what some people like to call a quagmire, but it is now also a debate over the fundamental morality of the war. And the fact that Cindy Sheehan is calling openly in a way that resonates for so many people for a full and complete quick withdrawal of all U.S. troops from Iraq, that is a significant widening of the political discourse.
Norm Solomon, you're talking about what you describe as sort of classic models of how presidents talk to the country, this country, about war. But don't the particular details matter? I mean, the president says, we can't pull out, it will be a mess. That may be a line you've heard in other wars. But if you look around the world, doesn't that look like a distinct possibility?
Well, all of the basic things that we're warned about that would transpire if the U.S. troops are pulled out are already well underway, whether it's a civil war, mayhem. Somebody that I met in Iraq, I just found out, her 17-year-old daughter has had part of her face shot off, and the hospitals don't provide decent care. She can't even be in a hospital. Here we have billions of dollars floating into the country from U.S. taxpayers, and there's no maintenance of decent health care for people who are being damaged and harmed by this war. So all of the scenarios for what would happen when the U.S. pulls out are well underway, with the exception of the fact that the dozen pseudo-permanent bases that are designed as such from the U.S. government would perhaps have to be abandoned. And of course, then there's the matter of the oil, which would not have so much leverage coming from Washington about its ultimate disposition. So this is a real contradiction coming to a head now.
And yet Americans still kind of half and half, though those halves sliding against the president on whether this war is a good idea. Norm Solomon, the new book is War Made Easy. Please stand by. We're talking about George Bush in the hot seat on Iraq. We expect to hear from Cindy Sheehan from the roadside by the ranch in Texas later in this hour. You can join us. Did you see the president in that hot Texas sun yesterday? Are you with him on Iraq? Are you headed somewhere else? Are you with Cindy Sheehan by the road in Crawford? Is just pulling out really an option? We're at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about George Bush in Crawford, Texas, in the hot seat on Iraq. We expect to hear in a few minutes now from Cindy Sheehan, the mother of a dead young soldier who has been holding vigil on the road on the way to the president's ranch, leaving him pretty darn uncomfortable looking there. Yesterday at the press conference he held after his meeting with Rice and Rumsfeld and the vice president, the president laid out more reasons, one of the reasons, why he does not agree with people who are calling for the U.S. to withdraw troops from Iraq. Let's listen.
I also have heard the voices of those saying, pull out now. And I thought about their cry and their sincere desire to reduce the loss of life by pulling our troops out. I just strongly disagree. Pulling the troops out would send a terrible signal to the enemy. Immediate withdrawal would say to the Zarqawis of the world and the terrorists of the world and the bombers who take innocent life around the world, you know, the United States is weak, and all we've got to do is intimidate and they'll leave.
The president yesterday in Crawford. You can join the conversation this hour. What more does the president need to say to Cindy Sheehan, to the nation? Is there anything more? And does your family have a soldier in Iraq? What do you think? What does that soldier think? You can join us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We've been talking this hour with Norman Solomon. He has joined us from San Francisco. His new book is War Made Easy. We're joined now by Austin, Texas man this morning, or today, in Palo Alto himself. Wayne Slater's with us. He's senior political editor at the Dallas Morning News, a longtime watcher of George W. Bush, co-author of Bush's Brain. Wayne Slater, good to have you with us.
Good to be with you, Tom.
Help us read the president's body language there yesterday. It did not look at all at ease. You've known him for a long time. Get inside that brain of the president today.
Yeah, I mean, that was a George Bush I've seen before. I saw it in 1997 on a much less important issue, a tough tax fight in Texas. I saw it during the campaign in 2000 when a lot of people thought things were going badly. He has an ability to sort of, in the sports lingo, get into the zone, to try to put himself in a place where he thinks and knows that he's going to move forward, that what he is doing is right, or at least is efficacious in some way, and that he's not going to be moved by it. And critics tend to think that's because he's stupid. Critics tend to think that that's because he isn't taking in information. Let me guarantee you that Karl Rove, his political advisor, and a master of polls and focus groups has advised the president every day about what America is thinking, what these polls are showing. But Bush has this amazing ability, stubbornness, whatever, to move forward when he thinks he's right. And what I saw was a guy yesterday kind of closing in, almost in athletic terms, and moving forward because despite the fact that a lot of things are going wrong, he thinks he's right.
Okay, a gut check. I have to say, I watched. The president, to me, looked a little rattled. When he finished that press conference, he kind of almost scuttled away from that microphone. The sun was on him. The heat was on him. He was sweating. You could feel him feeling Cindy Sheehan's presence, even though he wasn't talking with her. Am I misreading the president there?
You're reading exactly right. Let me tell you, the heat's not bothering him. He's used to that. The sun isn't bothering him. He loves that stuff here in Texas.
Mm-hmm.
This Cindy Sheehan problem is a real problem. And an advisor like Karen Hughes, who's no longer formally with the White House, is exactly the person who could have told him she cuts through the clutter. She's exactly the nightmare that the White House must have expected and absolutely feared. She is a single individual face, and it's the kind of thing that the president cannot answer successfully. Yesterday, he could say only what he said, and frankly, I thought he was fairly successful, considering the options. You have to show some sympathy, but move back directly to message. He was uncomfortable, very uncomfortable, Tom.
Let me hear you tell us, explain to us, Wayne, why he doesn't go out and speak to her.
Well,
is it a no-win situation? Is that the Rove calculation here?
Yeah, I think so. I think both Rove and Karen, if she were still there, would say, look, the downside of going out there is that you look weak. You've got to tow members of the press corps with you, and you look weak.
Well, then invite her up to the ranch. Have her into the kitchen. Sit there. Have her in the regal ranch setting.
I think that's an option, and I wouldn't rule that out. There's going to be a few more weeks now at the ranch, and so I wouldn't rule that out as impossible. The problem there is the White House calculation the political calculus says that if you invite her, what about the next parent? What about the next parent? I mean, what could one do? What the White House has tried to do and did yesterday at the ranch was put out a list of the 900 or so folks, parents, family members, who the president has talked to privately as if to sort of put up their defense. If they break that and invite her, then who's to say that the next sort of media celebrity, the next parent grieving over a loss that increasingly Americans are finding troublesome.
There is a big line of people who could be out there. The polls, I mean, just looking at this nationally, Norman Solomon, I wonder how you're interpreting these polls. We see here, this is a CNN poll just from last week, early in the month. This is before the sort of continuing string of fairly high casualty days we've seen for U.S. troops in Iraq. 56% of those polled said they thought things were going badly for the U.S. in Iraq, 43% going well. 57% said the war has made the United States less safe from terrorism. That number up dramatically from just 39% a couple of months ago. 54% said they believe it was a mistake to send U.S. troops to Iraq. That's the reversal since just last month when 53% said not a mistake. What do you see in those poll numbers, Norm Solomon?
More and more people are perceiving a disconnect between the picture that the president and his team have tried to present about this war and the information that is more in sync with reality. And so the president, as time goes on, is seen as somebody increasingly disconnected from the real world. And meanwhile, the moral stature is more and more gravitating in the public mind and in the media to a voice like Cindy Sheehan. And it's when the president loses the effectiveness of the mantra that he repeats that he's starting to run out of rhetorical options. You know, he's painted himself into a corner with this denunciation of cut and run. Frankly, the trial balloons in the last couple of weeks, I think, brought in some rather gullible members of the punditocracy to say, well, gee, maybe they're really considering a major withdrawal. They can't have a major withdrawal and stick with the rhetorical baseline that has been laid down, which is we can't cut and run. And given that so many people in Iraq, according to the most credible polls, don't want Americans there, given that the occupying forces are not able to suppress what is resistance to the occupation, Frankly, the deceptions of this administration are now coming back to haunt it.
And yet that real world you refer to can look pretty complicated out there, and there's still a substantial portion of Americans I would read these polls saying, hope to push through to some kind of stable situation the U.S. can support there. Let's turn to our callers. We're going to hear in just a moment from Larry Diamond, but right now we've got Mark calling from Davenport, Iowa. Hi, Mark, you're on the air. What do you think?
Oh, I love your show, first of all. Snapshot about myself, I spent 6 years in the Army as a field medic. My dad, 28 years, Air Force, and both my cousins served in Vietnam.
Okay.
And I am of the mind of this, we will never, and we're ignorant to believe we could ever win the war in a true war in Iraq, because Iraq in the whole Middle East, if you will, is a country and a world so far from the Western world that they've been fighting for tens of thousands of years. We are nothing more than another insult to their world in which they live.
But Mark, that's a pretty broad brush, isn't it? I mean, a lot of Iraqis clearly did not like Saddam Hussein. The president says they would prefer freedom. What do you say to that?
Oh, I say then stand up to the plate. That's what I say.
Isn't that where President Bush is, or where he sees himself? He's at the plate. He's got the troops there.
Well, that's just it. We are standing up to the plate. But take the number of people in Iraq and a number of their military who are actually stepping up to the plate and are becoming useful and actually protecting their country for themselves, and it's nothing as a percentage to the general population.
So you're saying let the Iraqis step up to the plate and grab that freedom for themselves.
Absolutely. You know, that's exactly what I'm saying. It is come to a point where I believe we should move out of Iraq, and I was thinking short order, relatively the next 12 months. I think the Iraqis have to say, you know, hey, either put up or shut up, you know, cut fish or cut bait or fish.
Right.
And they really have to do that. They have to stand up to protect themselves. And if they can't protect themselves, we are not the responsible party for the rest of the world to take care of those kind of issues. I mean, I appreciate that we went in and took out Saddam.
Yep.
I appreciate the reasons we went in originally, because we had technology, we had
We had the way to do it, but then there's the way to get out. Mark, we hear that coming from the place of Army Green there in Iowa. I want to turn for perspective on that to Sunnyvale, California. Larry Diamond joins us. He's senior fellow at the Hoover Institution, founding co-editor of the Journal of Democracy. For the first 3 months of 2004, he served as a senior advisor to the U.S. Coalition Provisional Authority in Iraq with Paul Bremer there. He's author of Squandered Victory, The American Occupation, and the Bungled Effort to Bring Democracy to Iraq. Larry Diamond, thank you for being with us.
Good morning, Tom.
So here's a moment and here's a call from a mother by the road to pull out of Iraq. What do you think of that call, Larry?
Well, first of all, your heart goes out to that mother and to all the parents and relatives, spouses, children of the more than 1,800 Americans who have died there now. You just hope and pray that they're not continuing to die in vain. Let me say that I was a college student during the Vietnam War. I was deeply involved in the anti-war movement against the Vietnam War. Almost everything we're hearing now in terms of the rhetoric of staying has an echo from the Vietnam War. You know, American credibility is on the line. If we pull out, we will embolden our enemies, and so on and so forth.
Well, it's easy to hear it that way, but you're there at the Hoover Institution, fairly conservative establishment. You know what the president said. We've got to change something in this region. Is that bunkum?
Well, let me say I'm not done.
Okay.
The difference is that in Vietnam, I don't think that our national security was directly at stake. I think we were deeply misguided in thinking that it was. And here there is a respect in which it is. That is, the enemy in the region, and I think we need to separate the different elements of the enemies that we're facing in Iraq, mm-hmm. but you know, Al-Qaeda and the international jihadist terrorist movement don't just want to, quote, liberate Iraq or drive out the United States from Iraq. They want to attack the United States in the United States, and they have done it And they will do it again if they get the opportunity.
So you're with the president's framing of this as the front line in the battle on terror. Is that where you come down?
Not exactly. I think the president has been from the beginning disingenuous about that. But the point I'm making is that if we walk away from Iraq, and if it descends into a state of civil war, and I have very little doubt that if we were to simply withdraw rapidly, Iraq would quickly become mired in a state of all-out civil war that would dwarf the violence that we see now. And if international jihadist terrorists are able to establish the kind of operating base in Iraq that they had in Afghanistan for larger scale actions against Europe and the United States, you know, our security will be directly threatened in a way that was never at stake in Vietnam. Moreover, the region would be much more destabilized than it was by the fall of Vietnam.
In Southeast Asia, we can understand that analysis. So what's to be done? I mean, even as it is, yesterday the Shiites talking about establishing an autonomous region in the south, that could be its own path to civil war under American tutelage.
Disastrously bad development.
So,
because if there are only three regions in Iraq, the Kurds, the Shiites, and then the remaining Sunni Arabs, it will further polarize an already inflamed ethnic cleavage.
So it could be worse, but it looks lousy. What should be done?
Okay, I think that we need to use all of our influence with the Shiites and the Kurds to underscore the importance of the nation's resources, which is to say oil, being preserved as a national resource and not going to the regions where, by an accident of geography, it happens to be in the ground.
You've said the United States should negotiate with the enemy in Iraq. What do you mean by that?
Well, that's the second point. Tom, for more than a year and a half now, elements of the insurgency, significant elements, have been sending signals through international intermediaries that they want to talk directly to the United States. And one of the things they'd like to get from the United States is a clear commitment that we're not going to seek permanent military bases in Iraq. The Bush administration has largely spurned these feelers, and I think we've paid a real price for it.
So are we going to have the equivalent of Paris peace talks going on here from the Vietnam parallel, Vietnam time?
I don't think it'd be the same thing, but there would be talks. We need the help of international intermediaries for this, including the United Nations. And I do think that, you know, we need to move forward on multiple tracks, and one of the tracks is political initiatives to see if we can erode some of the motivating factors politically behind the insurgency and bring them into the political process.
You think that can really pull the sting here, that could do it or make it a manageable conflict?
Tom, I don't think anything alone is going to do it. I think there's going to be multiple things happening over a period of months that will help us turn the corner on this and take at least some of the sting out of the insurgency. But this, to me, seems to be a very important element that we have not pursued.
And meanwhile, at home, your view of public opinion in the United States, how much time does President Bush have here? How much depth of support?
Well, he has a core of support that isn't going to go away, that's very loyal conservative Republican. But I think he's, you know, plummeting fast down toward that core. And I think the White House is, you know, increasingly alarmed by it and doesn't have a strategy to deal with it.
Larry Diamond at the Hoover Institution, thank you very much for joining us this hour.
Okay. It's been a pleasure.
Norm Solomon, Larry Diamond has been there. He says, let's negotiate quick.
Yeah, well, I talked, for instance, to Mike Hoffman, who founded Iraq Veterans Against the War, fought his way as a Marine into Tikrit and Baghdad during the invasion. And he's one of an increasing number of veterans who've been there who say that, look, this war was wrong to begin with, it's wrong now. I think the notion that U.S. national security is at stake is really a notion at work with making it a self-fulfilling prophecy.
All that and oil, all that potential turmoil, and no national security at stake?
Well, if might makes right is the model U.S. foreign policy is going to pursue, then naturally others will be encouraged to take the same idea forward.
How about oil keeps the lights on?
Well, again, there've got to be solutions to dropping huge bombs on people and then saying we shouldn't use violence to solve problems.
We hear that. Norm Solomon, Wayne Slater, please stand by. We're talking about George Bush in the hot seat. Cindy Sheehan coming up. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
Support for On Point comes from the listeners of WBUR Boston, Bicon Dental Implants, offering short implants that can eliminate the need for bone grafting. Information is available at Bicon.com, B-I-C-O-N.com, and Private Wealth Management at Babson Capital. For more than 60 years, helping clients build and preserve wealth through financial planning, investment management, and trust services. In Cambridge and on the web at BabsonCapital.com.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about George Bush in the hot seat on Iraq. Wayne Slater with the Dallas Morning News is with us. Norman Solomon, author of War Made Easy, is with us. And right now, from that roadside outside the president's ranch in Crawford, is the woman who has really cranked up the heat on the president this month. We're joined by Cindy Sheehan. Ms. Sheehan, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you.
What did you think of the president's comments yesterday? He appeared to be speaking essentially to you.
Well, he said that I have his sympathy, but he doesn't agree with my stance, or he doesn't agree with pulling the troops out now. That's not what I want. I don't want his sympathy, and I'm not demanding that he withdraw the troops, even though that's my position. What I want to do is ask him, what's the noble cause that my son died for? Because I don't believe an illegal aggression on a country that's no threat to the United States of America, dying for that is a noble cause. And I also want him to stop using my son and the rest of the members of Gold Star Families for Peace. We don't want them to use our family members' deaths as justification for the continued killing.
The president raised that tack again yesterday, saying we have to honor those who have fallen in Iraq. We have to go ahead and accomplish what they died for. You don't follow that logic?
What did they die for? What is the mission? The mission keeps on changing. When he went to Congress with the War Powers Act, he said weapons of mass destruction and terrorism. And the Downing Street memos prove that he already knew that there was no links. He didn't have weapons of mass destruction, and there was no links to Saddam and Al-Qaeda or 9/11. And so now the mission keeps on changing. The mission keeps on changing. And if it keeps on changing, when is it going to be accomplished? You know, he said mission was accomplished on May 1st, 2003, and that's been over 1,600 American deaths ago.
Cindy Sheehan, your son Casey, can you describe him, describe how and when he died?
Well, Casey is my hero. Casey is a true American hero for the way he lived his life. He lived his life with integrity and courage and honesty, and he always stood up for what he believed in. And he did not believe in this war, but he believed in his buddies. And I begged him not to go to Iraq, and he said, Mom, I have to go. My buddies are going, and it's my duty. And he was killed 5 days after he got there in an ambush in Sadr City, Iraq.
You, along with others who have lost family members, had lost family members in Iraq, met with President Bush in the White House in June 2004. Presidents are busy individuals. Was that not enough? Why?
Well, first of all, people aren't doing their homework. I didn't meet with him in the White House. It was at Fort Lewis, Washington. And presidents are busy people, but you know what? He works for us. He works for the people. We pay his salary. Mm. And if we want to talk to him, and especially if we're a movement that represents 62% of the American public who want our troops to start coming home and who think this war is a mistake, then he needs to meet with us.
You've said that you wanted him to see pictures of Casey. You wanted him to hear stories about Casey, and that the president somehow avoided that in your meeting with him. How did that unfold?
Well, we thought we would use the short time we had with him, which we were told was going to be 5 to 10 minutes. We wanted to use that time to show him, you know, what an amazing person that he took from us. You know, that Casey was an indispensable part of our family and not just human cannon fodder. And he wouldn't look at the pictures. And every time we tried to talk about Casey, he would change the subject.
You've been working for peace for a while now in Iraq. Are you surprised by the scale of the kind of storm that's building around you there outside the president's ranch gates?
You know what? I'm amazed and overwhelmed, but I'm not surprised because, you know, I just didn't come out of the woodwork on Saturday and decide to do this. I've been working for peace for months and months, and so I go all over the country and I speak in front of audiences large and small, and one common denominator is we're sick and tired of what's going on. What can we do to change it? What can we do to help Cindy?
Cindy Sheehan, we have callers who want to speak with you. If you can hang on, let me turn to Joyce, calling from Warren, Rhode Island. Joyce, you're on the air.
Thank you, Tom, and thank you, Cindy. My name is Joyce Cathberg. I was supposed to sing for you when you were in Providence, Rhode Island.
Oh, yeah, how's everything going?
We're going okay here, and we're so proud of you. Listen, I have a song. This is what I would have sung for you. This is the last verse of it, and just please hang in there. We're all with you.
Okay.
Let's hear it.
It was early in the morning when the sound of people marching broke my slumber and my dreaming with this song that they were singing. This march goes on and on with no end and no beginning, for an end to endless war. Join the song that we are singing. Not another mother's son, not another father's daughter, in the name of all that's holy, put an end to all this slaughter. Not another mother's son, not another father's daughter, not another mother's son, and not another father's daughter.
Well, there's...
Oh, that was beautiful. Thank you.
Thank you, too.
Straight,
well, with you, Cindy.
Straight from Warren, Rhode Island, to you there by the road in Crawford. Cindy Joyce, thank you for calling. Let's get another call.
Yeah, thank you, Joyce. That was wonderful.
Annie is calling from Boston. Annie, you're on the air.
Hi, Cindy. Thank you so much, Tom, for having me on the air.
Mm-hmm.
Hi, Annie.
Hi.
Annie, what's your message for Cindy? You've got her on the line.
Hi. Well, I'm calling from Boston, and I work for Boston Mobilization, and we are actually holding a peace vigil this Saturday from 6:30 to 8 in your honor, Cindy, and we are going with the message that we support you, and we think you're really brave and noble for what you're doing, and we really support your cause. I think personally that you're really courageous for doing this, and I know there's a lot of, I've been working against the war for a while now, but I know that in terms of how people are getting active and how people are mobilizing around this, you've really helped people mobilize around this, and you've really, like, been the turning point, I think, and the like, changing point for a lot of people.
Annie, we've got it, and we appreciate your call.
Thank you, Annie, and thank you, Boston.
Cindy Sheehan, you can hear more support. Where do you think this is headed, Cindy?
You know what? This is headed after August 31st. We're headed to Washington, D.C., and we're going to set up a permanent 24-hour vigil until the troops are brought home, as near as the White House as we can get. We're going to keep the pressure on. We're going to want our leadership to catch up with the majority of the American people and start bringing the troops home. And there's a big United for Peace and Justice rally on September 24th that this is building momentum for, accidentally building momentum for.
There you are. How long do you plan to stay by the road in Crawford?
Until August 31st.
Until the president goes back to Washington.
Pardon me?
Until the president goes back to Washington.
Yes, and then we're moving to Washington as a 24-hour vigil, a permanent vigil, and we're going to set it up as a rotating thing in Washington, D.C.
Cindy Sheehan, by the roadside on the way to President Bush's ranch. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much.
Wayne Slater, there you hear two very different kind of views of the world from Cindy and the voices of some of her supporters we just heard there, and the cloistered world of George Bush at the ranch with Condi Rice and the vice president and Donald Rumsfeld. Here's a clash of continents.
Yeah, I tell you, this is a White House. All White Houses want to be in control. And this is a White House, both when he was governor and certainly as president, and the White House that wants to have absolute control over everything. Cindy Sheehan is a problem. This is a problem for this White House, and not because of, with all due respect to the people in the movement who called,
mm-hmm.
that's not what moves someone like George Bush.
Mm-hmm.
The movement now has a face, and the face is a soft-spoken mother who has lost a son. And this is the kind of thing that can really ignite a problem. I don't see George Bush moving backwards. I don't see him capitulating or seeming to capitulate by trying to meet with her. He's an awfully stubborn, or direct person. But at the same time, the White House has to be very, very frightened by the potential of this one mother.
Bruce is calling from Salem, New Hampshire. Hi, Bruce. You're on the air.
Hello there. The conversation has gone in an interesting direction. I'm a Republican, I think.
Okay.
I'm not one who favored the decision to go into Iraq. I was very disappointed with that. I think it was a huge mistake. It was done for the wrong reasons. At the same time, I watch this movement that's growing with competing feelings of glee and despair, because I'd love to see the troops come home. I think we're there for the wrong reasons. But I also think that we've stirred up a real mess, and pulling out now would be a very dangerous thing to do. Earlier on the program, you asked, well, what could we do about this situation?
Yes.
I have a mild suggestion, I suppose, which is, first of all, I'd love to hear this administration admit right out there that we are in there for the wrong reasons, and that the reason we need to stay is to try to make a bad situation better, and maybe talk about why we don't want to be in this kind of situation again in the future. But maybe more importantly, we really need to recover the moral high ground and back away from some of the decisions and policies that this administration's put in place, which is really the strike first approach. We can't protect ourselves by threatening the rest of the world. The moment we feel threatened, we're going to go out and start throwing the bombs around. And as we said earlier, might makes right is not a good policy for the most powerful nation on Earth.
Bruce, let me ask you, can the U.S. at this point get to the moral high ground and have stability in a region that, as Larry Diamond said earlier, many see as critical to the national security?
Well, I think that making some clear statements about what we will be doing in the future and how we will work with the rest of the world could right now take the moral high ground away from some of our foes. If we were to say we are not going to be reaching out to attack the first person that makes a fist in our direction, would sap a lot of the energy away from those who look at us as being dangerous and dare I say it, a rogue nation in of ourselves.
Bruce, our Republican in New Hampshire, thanks very much for calling. Norm Solomon, we've heard a protest song in this hour that sounds a lot like the Vietnam era that you allude to in War Made Easy. But do you really feel that kind of protest chemistry stirring here?
Well, it's part of the mix that also is coming from the grassroots, that is coming from people who will never get into the streets, who are turning against this war. You know, the last two chapters of my book mention spin cycle themes that are right on point to where we are now. America needs the resolve to kick the Vietnam syndrome, and withdrawal would cripple U.S. credibility. Those are mantras coming from the war supporters. They're having less and less effect. And I think we're at the cusp of something that is very dynamic. The president committed to war, thriving on abstraction. Cindy Sheehan and those she represents are the opposite of abstraction. And as the human terms of this war come into focus, support, I think, is likely to continue to drop.
Gene is calling from Toronto, Canada. Gene, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you?
Very well, thanks.
Good. One of my best friends has a son who was with the 1st Marines. They were the first people to land in Iraq, and he was injured, and he was sent home after a while. They actually was injured twice, and he was very committed to doing his job. Not that he believed in the war, but he's a Marine, and he's now been discharged, and he's living in the backwoods in Tennessee.
How's he doing?
He's cutting wood, and I said, why is he there? And he said, he simply can't face society after the horrors he's seen. And it got me to thinking about, you know, we have hundreds of thousands of homeless on the street. Many of these people are Vietnam vets. I was in the service. I was a corpsman in the Navy. I see the terrible price we're paying when these young men and women are coming back after the horrors they've been exposed to, what they've seen, what they've had to do.
It's personal and it's real, and as Cindy Sheehan reminds us, it's very close to family and friends for many people. Gene, our time is short. I want to thank you for calling in from Toronto. And Norm Solomon and Wayne Slater, it's been great having each of you this morning. Norm Solomon, author of War Made Easy, thank you very much for joining
us. Thank you.
And Wayne Slater at the Dallas Morning News, always great hearing from you, Wayne. Thank you for being with us today.
Great to be with you, Tom.
I want to turn now to our On Point news analyst, Jack Beattie. He joins us from Hanover, New Hampshire. Jack, you've been listening in on this kind of remarkable hour of Cindy Sheehan on the one hand, Larry Diamond saying be careful about getting out of there. You may just may be unbearable for American security. What do you hear in all this? Is something changing, something turning in the country, Jack?
Well, I don't think anything can turn with the president or his party until people like Bruce are heard from, our Republican caller from New Hampshire. In the latest poll, 79% of Republicans approve of the president's handling of the war. That's down from 83% a year or so ago. But that's still a very high level of support. And notably this week, the White House backed away from the claims or the statements made by generals that perhaps we could get out some troops next year, because the Weekly Standard, an organ of Republican conservative thinking, had said, oh, no, you're getting weak-kneed. We can't hear that. So those are the two audiences, I think, that control here. If this number among Republicans starts to go down, and if even some of the conservative commentariat begins to have second thoughts, then I can imagine the president having second thoughts.
The president is scheduled to have a 5-week stay in Crawford, the longest presidential vacation in 36 years, the Washington Post says. But this can't be much fun for George Bush. It did not look fun for him yesterday, even though, as Wayne Slater, who knows him very well, says, this is a man who gets stubborn when challenged.
Yes, it can't be much fun from him to hear Cindy Sheehan saying, I wanted him to look at the human being, quote, that he took from us,
Mm-hmm. Not the war.
Yeah. You know, uniquely, this is George Bush's war. He did not, events did not drive him there, as they did with Lyndon Johnson, as they did with Richard Nixon, as they have pretty much for all presidents. He chose it.
I wonder if you can, we just got a minute left, but can you imagine any president you've known going to that roadside, you know, sort of getting down on his haunches in the dirt there with Cindy Sheehan and talking? Would any president have done that?
Well, Franklin Roosevelt, I think. I was trying to find out a comparable situation, but I couldn't. I just suspect that his confidence in his ability to talk to people and to empathize would come through. And Bill Clinton. This is the kind of thing he would turn into a major political opportunity. And he would show, you know, that they would not agree at the end of the day, but he would show empathy, and not categorical empathy for the loved one and the mom, as the president said, but specific for this one life, for this one woman, to get real about it and concrete and to get out of these stereotypical statements the president keeps making, which really, I think, must just chill Ms. Cindy Sheehan.
Well, George Bush, no lip biter, but sweating there yesterday. Jack Beattie, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Jack Beattie, On Point News Analyst. On Point is produced by Meghna Chakrabarty, Julie Jopp, Eileen Amata, Stefano Katsonis, Matt Lieber, James Ross, Christina Russo, and Karen Schiffman. With help from John Berger, Persephone Meal, and Angel Coselli, our senior producer is Graham Griffith. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR, National Public Radio.